standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
This episode of the Paracast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/paracast. That's audiblepodcast.com/paracast. And now, on with the show. One of the subjects that we haven't discussed except in passing on the Paracast over the years, and it's nearly 5 years now, has been the legends of the Men in Black. Now, yeah, we had a discussion, kind of a remembrance of Gray Barker from the movie Shades of Gray on a few months back, and we talked about his contribution to the Men in Black. But before we got on, I learned that one of our guests actually wrote a book review in the third grade about Gray Barker's book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. Who do we have? Funny you should ask. We have our co-host, Chris O'Brien. A second co-host, bringing up the rear, Greg Bishop. Been a while since we've seen you, Greg.
Yep, hello.
We have Tim Beckley. We have Alan Greenfield. And we have a special guest, whom you'll hear from later, Claudia Cunningham, with some unusual insights into the Men in Black. So, okay, Tim Beckley, you're in the third grade.
Geez.
Let's go back through time.
Yeah, I had to choose, obviously, a subject to do a book review now. I guess the obvious ones, I decided not to do Silas Marner. Had to pick something unique and unusual. It was a book by Gray Barker called They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. Now, I've never been, I was never too great in school. I slept through a lot of classes because I was up late actually listening to Long John on the radio, believe it or not, instead of doing my homework. I enjoyed the book tremendously, and I guess my efforts showed in my presentation because I got a B. Maybe it was a B minus because the teacher was a little bit of a hard nose there, but I did get a good grade on it. And there's a little bit of synchronicity, obviously, in that gene because Gray Barker was my first publisher. When I was about 15 or 16 years old, Gray Saucerian Press put out my first book, which is still in print, The Shaver Mystery and the Inner Earth, which is known as Subterranean Worlds Inside Earth. He also did my book, Space Contacts, and a book that I did about Wilbert Smith, who was the Canadian researcher. So Gray and I were pretty good friends, to say the least. Whenever, you know, his credibility has been brought on many times, perhaps even on your show by Jim Mosley. But all I can tell you is that I think Gray had a bit of, maybe a little bit of mischief in his heart. But for anyone to stick with the subject as long and as dedicated as he did, there's something just beneath the surface there, you know. Of course, after Gray passed away, which was very tragic, you know, he did lecture for our the various conferences and expos that we had around the country, and he always did it just for airplane fare, just like most of the speakers did, obviously.
That's because you weren't paying the speakers, I gather. But
yes.
Let's go back to
the
manual.
I'm not. Well, just give me two more seconds here. So when he passed away, I bought his estate the last 50 hardcover copies of that book, which I got my B minus on in the third grade. And, you know, Gene, there's something spooky about this that most ufologists kind of sweep this under the rug, but synchronicity played quite a bit of a role in this topic. It's more than just a coincidence. I believe that in the third grade, I would have the opportunity to review that book and later on in life be published by Gray and then by the last 50 remaining copies of They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. We can get into that later. I think that there's a collective consciousness out there. John C. Lilly called it the galactic coincidence control. He believes it actually was an intelligence out there that controls synchronicity, and I would tend to agree with him.
Greg Bishop, you've done some studies into the so-called Men in Black. What can you tell us to get started?
Well, it's funny. I interviewed Bill Moore when I was doing my zine, Excluded Middle, in the 1990s. I said, what do you know about the Men in Black? Mythos, whatever he wants to call it. And if a lot of people could guess what his take on it was. He said that the government had used the Men in Black mythos to play dirty tricks on people, to get information out of them and all that. So there were actually government Men in Black people, but they were using it as a ruse to scare information out of people and get, you know, their pictures from them and everything, which sounds entirely plausible, I'm sure.
But let's look at this here. Obviously, our first inkling of the legend of the Men in Black goes back to Albert K. Bender. So Albert K. Bender runs this organization, and he claims, after not very much time, that he has to shut it down because he's been visited by three men in black who said, you have found the secret of UFOs, and it's time for you to shut up. Let me ask you, Greg, having studied a lot of this, was that just a tall tale, something to give an excuse as to why he was getting out from under this field?
Well, a couple of the other guests might know for sure. I've got the idea that Bender got very involved with this subject, and so any kind of input into his life having to do with the UFO subject probably was looked upon with great significance by him, which meant he had a paranoid mind, and I believe, and would make what he would out of what his surroundings were. Because I don't think, apart from Bender, and if somebody can correct me, that there's any corroboration for anything he ever wrote or said about his Men in Black experiences, or actually a few of the other ones.
Well, of course, he was also a contactee. He claimed to have met these people from the...
He claimed to be a contactee as well,
right.
So... Who knows what was going on in his room with pictures of werewolf and things like that pasted to his wall. They used to freak his guests out.
Yeah, but you know, this is Tim over here. That's not that unusual. Look at me, for example. I have a sincere interest in UFOs and the paranormal, but I'm also Mr. Creepo. I do low-budget horror movies. So one thing really doesn't have that much to do with another. It's just an interest. Now, actually, I might be the only one here today who actually met Albert K. Bender. Did anybody else meet Bender?
I raised my hand.
Never met him. He lives out in L.A., as far as I know. Anybody that's tried to approach him gets chased off his lawn.
Well, he would be awful elderly if he were still alive. I don't know.
I think. I can have somebody track him down.
I did meet him. And, of course, he not only lectured for Jim Moseley's group back in the, I guess that would have been the 70s or something like
it
that.
It was the 60s, Tim.
Well, no. Well, yeah, two times, Gene.
The
One
first
time
he had this book out called Flying Saucers and the Three Men.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Right. Explain, maybe why don't we do this, and Tim, is maybe explain to our listeners, and we'll get more into this as we progress with the show. But he comes out with this book, and the three men are really aliens, according to him.
They have a base under the South Pole, I believe. And they take him there, and they materialize in his home, and they warn, and he has bad things occur to him. It's like all this negativity soon, accumulates in his life. I think everybody takes that story with a total grain of thought. I do believe at that point he was just trying to write science fiction, and probably not very good science fiction. But his original story, he did present at the Congress of Scientific Ufology. He sent a tape in to Jim Moseley, which Jim played. That was besides the lecture that he actually gave at the, the Hotel Woodstock in New York, in a little room there that held about 100 people in those days. In fact, online there is a couple of photos of Albert showing what the beings from this planet look like. And that tape, actually, I think I've incorporated in one of my MIB collections. I have a CD set that includes some of that. Yeah, so I don't think he changed his story. He just came out of semi-retirement to be a sci-fi presenter. But
so basically, the long and short of it is that his story of the Men in Black was a tall tale. It's something he made up for whatever reason.
This
book was a science fiction book, right?
Yeah, that part I would agree with, because there's nothing to substantiate his claims in it. But if you read his original publication, which was Space Review, it was a very nice little newsletter with UFO reports and citing his details and things. Nothing whatsoever to do with anything horror or even outlandish. I mean,
we will be in a very outlandish condition if we don't do the station break. We have a large assemblage of guests. We have our co-hosts, Chris O'Brien and Greg Bishop. We have Alan Green, whom we'll hear from in just a moment. We have Tim Beckley. We have a special guest of Tim's, Claudia Cunningham. All this happening, please write us with your comments. news@theparacast.com. news@theparacast.com. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Paracast.
Yeah.
As you know, the PowerCast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks. With more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers, for listeners of the PowerCast, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One book to consider, for example, is Above Top Secret, The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up by Timothy Good. Timothy Good, as you know, has been a guest on the PowerCast. Yet another book worth considering from Audible.com is Lies and Deception, UFOs and the Secret Agenda, from Timothy Good once again, and also from our old friend Nick Pope. As you know, Nick Pope has also been on the PowerCast. This is another book that you're definitely going to want to check out. For this book or another free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/powercast. That's audiblepodcast.com/powercast.
Again, the Congressional Budget Office sounds the alarm. This time warns of Greek-style U.S. debt crises. You heard me right. The GAO is drawing a parallel between the U.S. economy, its debt, and the current Greek economic meltdown. With the debt-to-GDP chart climbing into unfamiliar territory, the growing budget deficit will rise to unsupportable levels. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. The Federal Debt and Risk of Financial Crises document the CBO has published is a must-read for every American. Covering the risk of continued deficit spending coupled with an aging population and the rising interest rates spell economic disaster. It's imperative that you get a copy of this document and study it for yourself. Call me today at 800-686-2237, and I'll send you a free copy. Again, call 800-686-2237 and ask for your copy of the CBO document. Once again, you need to read this government report. Call 800-686-2237.
Becoming a modern smoker is now easier and more cost-effective, thanks to LeCig. Traditional smokers the world over love LeCig. E-cigarettes with a look, feel, and taste of real cigarettes, but without the nasty smoke, ashes, or stains. LeCig is powered by revolutionary microelectronic technology. A small, rechargeable battery and unique replaceable cartridge provide all the satisfaction and benefits of smoking without the smoke and all the hazards. See the large variety of LeCig e-cigarette supplies and accessories at LeCig.com. That's L-E-C-I-G. IG.com. LeCig is competitively priced, comes with the best customer service, a 30-day warranty, and satisfaction guaranteed. What a great gift idea. For a 10% discount, mention GCN when you call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Ask for fast, free, same-day shipping. Order online at LeCig.com and use promo code GCN at checkout. That's LeCig.com. LeCig, for today's modern smoker.
Question. What would you rather drink? Acidic water, which burns holes in your body and causes loss of bone mass? Or alkaline water, which promotes high energy and vibrant health? The answer is clear. And if you're drinking acidic water, you're helping cancer cells and bacteria to grow out of control. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals. Using Plasma pH Drops is the best way to alkalize your water and help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops in the water you drink to raise the pH to a healthy alkaline level. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. Disease organisms like bacteria, viruses, or cancer cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's A-L-K-A-Vision.com. Or by calling 269-409-1776. Again, 269-409-1776.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
The only function Chris will serve today, because we're recording this on his day off.
He's got the cue down. That's perfect.
Well, it's because he's busy answering questions that I sent him for a book that I'm working on. Right, Chris?
I don't think he has an answer for that. But seriously speaking, ladies and gentlemen, we have Chris O'Brien and Greg Bishop as our co-hosts, Alan Greenfield, Tim Beckley, Claudia Cunningham. So, Chris, Tim is working on a book on Men in Black, and he's talking to you about it?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and describe the book first?
Oh, yeah, it's actually a book about what I call the dark side of ufology. It includes an old, rare tome called Round Trip to Hell in a Flying Saucer, which was written in about 1956, where a gentleman claims that he was actually whisked away to a planet called Hell by Satan. Now, that's a rather outlandish story, to say the least, but, you know, Nick Redford, who we interviewed in this book, did his own work about this government think tank that believed that demons were actually behind the UFO phenomena. There is actually all sorts of evidence to show that the UFO witnesses are being possessed. There is also evidence, of course, of not only UFOnauts shape-shifting, but even the craft themselves morphing in midair. So we're taking this from all sides, and of course, Chris is an expert on the trickster and on shape-shifting, so I have to include him in the work.
Now, what you're referencing here, by the way, is that book that Nick wrote called Final Events and the Secret Government Group on Demonic UFOs and the Afterlife. That was on our October 3rd show. Chris was there, I was there, and Nick was there talking about it. Now, let's look into some of the ramifications here. Chris, do you think that some of these Men in Black cases may have some trickster or tricksterish elements to them?
Absolutely. In fact, some of the most well-known and classic encounters have very tricksterish qualities. The one case I think that Jacques Vallée mentions in his book Confrontations, I believe, or it may have been Messengers of Deception, where two of these Men in Black types came into a restaurant during a pretty bad snowy day. And weren't dressed properly for the weather. And then memory serves me correct, probably somebody knows the story better than I do. They tried to eat Jell-O with a fork, or one of them did.
Gee, I do that all the time. I'm not a Man in Black.
I know. Well, genius.
You're making us wonder.
Yeah. But, yeah, I do think, actually, that there are true cases of this, of a paranormal nature. But I think they're vastly outweighed by more mundane government agents showing up and trying to silence UFO witnesses or gain more information.
I disagree with that entirely. I think there are very few cases that include government workers. Most of these things, at least in the cases that I have collected and read, and that would be 400 or 500, I would say that 95% of them are of paranormal nature that we're talking about.
Are the real thing,
something,
huh?
Yeah, something very, very strange about it. In fact, there was a very well-known case during the Wanakee, New Jersey UFO flap back in the 1960s. I wrote that up for Fate magazine, where the town council was actually convened in City Hall, and they had a big debate over what they should do about these sightings. And some so-called investigators came into the room and flashed the credentials and years later, it came out, oh, they must have been investigators from the NICAP, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, and that confused the witness into thinking they were an official organization. Well, recently, there was a posting on the Internet, and of course, we can't verify it, but the posting is there, from a gentleman who was at that meeting who says, absolutely not members of NICAP. These were some guys that threatened to take them out in the back, the back alleyway, or to pull guns on them. These were not government officials. These were not members of NICAP. I don't think any members of NICAP have ever been accused of carrying firearms. So I would say that 95% of these cases are hallucinatory in the sense that they may not have actual appearance. You know, it's a paranormal thing, and a few cases may be government agents that misrepresent themselves, because we know for a fact that there are government agents that have a personal interest in this, that are when they go to investigate a sighting or a landing or an encounter, may not be officially out there to research it, but are doing it kind of on their own.
I was going to say that there are cases that absolutely are implausible in that, for instance, the witness would have a sighting or a close encounter and would tell nobody. And before they could blink, literally within minutes, people would show up and try to silence them. Those type of cases are very, very difficult to explain away as some sort of government agency agency or some sort of governmental workers. My own experience in this particular aspect of the field is very limited in that I had only one or two, maybe three reports that would fall into this category out of several thousand, reports or stories that I investigated over the years. And so it's not something that I am intimately familiar with. Of course, I can only go based on, my own research. And I do find that there is a potential for more government involvement than you would think in this whole field, because I think this is a perfect way to create plausible deniability and to keep people quiet.
And also, let's figure that the government today, their technology probably has caught up with that of the men in black. They can create holograms and tap your phone and do other malicious things that the MIB were accused of doing 25 years ago, and it would have been paranormal or fanciful. And today it's probably just a run-of-the-mill Big Brother.
Alan Greenfield, I wanted you to chime in here, and we're going to break for next segment in just a moment, but you wrote a book about the men in black that I gather has more of a mystical aspect to it. Would you explain that?
In 30 seconds or less? No. I'll give it a try.
You can start. Let's just do an introduction and then go on with this in our next segment.
I think, first of all, the term men in black needs to be defined, because in most cases they are not necessarily dressed in black, and they're almost certainly not men in the usual sense we mean that term. Even the government cases, often you'll have the men in black who act funny but flash credentials, and 2 hours later you'll have somebody legitimately from the, in the old days from the Air Force, currently from whatever agency, show up, and they're totally mystified by the people that showed up before. But I think these cases run from 1947 to the most recent I have. I have a similar, but probably different individual cases from Tim's, of about 500-600 cases running all the way up to August of 2010. And I'll be glad to discuss why I think they happen when there's a little more time to do so.
Well, we're going to give you that time. But I think one of the things we're going to try to look at here is to whether most of the men in black cases, it's just a myth. The myth, of course, that brought about the comic book and the movies and everything, or there's reality behind it, which, of course, is what we're seeing here. The guest group, we have two guest hosts, two co-hosts, as a matter of fact. We have Chris O'Brien, Greg Bishop, our special guest, Tim Beckley, Alan Greenfield, Claudia Cunningham. We'll hear from her soon. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story." Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaway, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Pure water. What could be better than the gift of health for your loved ones? And who better to help you give the gift this holiday season than BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com? If those on your gift list are drinking or bathing in unfiltered city or well water, chances are that water is contaminated with rust, bacteria, chlorine, and fluoride. For just pennies a day, Berkey Water Filters remove dangerous contaminants from both well and city water, is powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water, and is great for camping and emergencies. Right now, GCN listeners get 5% off.
off all ceramic filter systems and free shipping on orders over $50. Purchase any filter system from BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com to get your choice of Berkey Sport bottles, a KDF shower filter, a set of fluoride filters, or the new Sight Class spigot absolutely free. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY. Give the gift of health at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com today.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, CrossbreedHolsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. Did you know that the global elite are now storing non-hybrid seeds in secret storage vaults near the Arctic Circle? Did you know that in a real meltdown, non-hybrid seeds can become more valuable than silver or gold? It's true, seeds have outperformed even gold and silver before in this country, and it's possible that could even happen again. So our friends at Solutions from Science have put together the perfect mix of non-hybrid seeds. They call it a survival seed bank. And it can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And here's the best part. These seeds have not been genetically modified in any way, and you actually get enough seeds to plant a full acre crisis garden. So visit them today at SurvivalSeedBank.com. That's SurvivalSeedBank.com. Or give them a call at 877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365. Remember, in a real crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. This is Alex Jones for SurvivalSeedBank.com.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Kurt Seven, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
We continue on the Paracast. I'm Gene Steinberg. Our co-hosts are Greg Bishop, Chris O'Brien, our guests Alan Greenfield and Tim Beckley, and a special guest, Claudia Cunningham. We'll hear from her very soon. Okay, so Alan, the floor is yours now. Obviously, you're accepting a reality here that it's not just some government agents playing around or civilians doing a few crazy things like a Jim Moseley and a Gray Barker. There's more to it.
Well, I'll comp to the following. In the early 1950s, after the 1953 CIA panel, I know for a fact, because I was told by Dewey Fournet, there was a decision to, in the Red Scare environment of the time, to disrupt local UFO groups for fear they might be infiltrated by communists and used to set off a false flap while the evil Soviet Union, all in quotes, invaded us while we were preoccupied with UFOs, and I'm sure there were some cases of that. There are some people who, in fact, have argued that the original National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, which was the first group I joined in 1960, actually was a front for that. Ray Palmer was very big on that, and there's a fairly persuasive case. Their board of directors is included, you know, the chair was an ex-CIA director and blah, blah, and so on. They tried to act like a para-government agency anyway, so it isn't a big leap to say that it was founded by a sincere guy and taken over by the CIA to direct people towards worrying about supposed censorship of UFO cases rather than examining the phenomenon for what it is. And I think some Men in Black cases during that period, and that's an awfully long time ago, I hate discussing the old cases as if there weren't new ones. They may have been indeed government agents trying to act weird to freak out the UFO investigators of the time. But not like the case that Tim is talking about, not like the classic succubi, incubi type cases where someone sees a UFO and then they get raped by an invisible creature. Is that a Man in Black case or not? Well, by my lights, it is, if we take the term to mean these forms that are attracted to UFO cases and scare the bejesus almost literally out of people. I tried very hard on a TV show that I did about 2 years ago. It was shown Thursday night in a bizarre coincidence with three other programs that I was on. It was my History Channel night for some reason, which I don't know. But one was new, the other two were, I didn't even know they were going to be on. I was just leaving the channel on, so I remember. But I tried very hard to get this case on because it was a local guy who had, he was a hotel clerk at the time, and he had seen a UFO, and he saw these two clearly uniformed Air Force officers come into the hotel and sit around the lobby and talk loudly about his UFO case, which made him extremely nervous. I may be garbling this slightly because this was, again, not one of my cases. It's one I tried to get the late and semi-lamented UFO hunters to interview him on their program, and I didn't pursue it any further once they were clear that they were not even going to do the interview in this vicinity. They took me to Huntsville, over to the Redstone Arsenal and Space Camp for that particular program. But anyway, he sees these two guys, and then they get in the elevator, go up. A few minutes later, two other guys dressed exactly the same. I asked him if this was typical of the hotel. He said, no, it was not typical. We did not get, although we got a lot of commercial pilots and things, but we did not get military personnel. And this was in peacetime, too, I might add. This was in the, well, relative peacetime, I think 1998, if I recall correctly. So about 12 years ago. They were dressed identically, had the same rank insignia, but they were different men, clearly. They sat down and began talking about the same topic, walked out of the hotel. 10 minutes later, the other two came down the elevator and walked out of the hotel. Clearly, there's something going on of a paranormal nature in cases of that sort. In my opinion, neither of these are actual Air Force personnel, and all of us have seen these occasional memos that come out where government agencies are furious that people have misidentified themselves as their personnel, and I don't think that's a cover. Those things are usually emerge under the Freedom of Information Act and are reluctant, and that the names are removed. But clearly, they don't want to take responsibility for that because it isn't their people. In fact, what those people are doing, if they're people at all, which I don't really believe they are not responsible. The government agency is not responsible, but these people are committing a felony.
All right, let me just ask you a quick question, Alan, before we go on. Okay, they're not the government, they're E.T., they're what?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure there is any such thing as an E.T., or to put it another way, I'm not sure the universe conforms to a 19th century or 17th century or Copernican model at all. In fact, most recent astrophysics post-Hubble has indicated the universe is enormously vast, but great distances are involved. And I have been saying since very early in my ufology career that we have no evidence whatsoever of anyone other than us going from one planet to another, and the assumption that because something is weird and involves aerial phenomena part of the time and beings part of the time that we don't recognize, that it doesn't have more to do with fairy lore and fairyland or other dimensions or other states of reality or other vibrational spheres. In other words, more of a Mead Lane sort of view of the universe than something to do with people from some vastly different distant star system.
I think, Alan, you're going to have to explain to a lot of listeners, when you drop the name Mead Lane, they don't know what you're talking about, so maybe explain to them.
Okay, before the term flying saucer, before there was a lot of publicity about flying discs, at least in the modern era, there was a wave of UFO sightings in the 1890s. There was a similar wave at the same time in Northern Europe, which resembled airplanes, only there were no airplanes, and in America there were no dirigibles, but that's what they looked like. That they were a generation away. And sometimes I wonder if people were just not seeing something out of phase with time, but that's more of an amusement for myself than anything else. Suffice to say that in the modern era, before Kenneth Arnold's 1947 case, which initiated, not through his efforts, but the term flying saucers and inaugurated the UFO era as we have come to understand it, Mead Lane and a circle of essentially trance mediums, most prominent among them, Mark Probert, were doing not mediumship with purportedly with the dead, but mediumship purportedly with non-terrestrial entities, or alternately and on other occasions with human beings who were what they termed ascended masters. And in his book, The Coming of the Guardians, which preceded all this, I think it was circa 1945. Tim might correct me on that, but it was certainly before the UFO dam burst into the media of the time. He was talking about flying discs and their relationship to these trance communications. I think that is closer, and mediumship is closer to what this phenomenon is all about, breaking on through to the other side, to borrow Jim Morrison's term.
Maybe Jim Morrison had it right here, Alan. I know there's a lot of questions we have to ask, and we will. We have Chris O'Brien and Greg Bishop as our co-hosts. We're talking with Alan Greenfield, Tim Beckley, Claudia Cunningham. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
All types of batteries for all types of gadgets.
We'll say it again.
All types of batteries for all types of gadgets. Electronics, toys, flashlights, computers, accessories, and more are at BatteryStation.com. Whatever type battery you need, alkaline, lithium, gel cell, NiCad, metal hydride, sealed lead acid, and more are at BatteryStation.com. Our homepage gives you quick access to ham, marine, police, fire, and aviation batteries. Plus, choose from our great selection of LED flashlights with no bulb to ever burn out and much longer battery life. Find many top brands, including Streamlight, Pelican, Surefire, Novatek, Gerber, and more at BatteryStation.com. You'll also find the most popular brands of ammunition and watertight cases for storing guns, food, electronics, survival gear, and more at BatteryStation.com. Call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. You will be surprised when you visit BatteryStation.com.
In a coming apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, towline, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Men, take control of your prostate health without the risk of nasty side effects with Prostate Secure. Early detection, regular prostate exams, and PSA tests are a must for men over 40. Listen, if you have symptoms of an enlarged prostate but don't want to take a drug with possible nasty side effects, or if you're over 40, then use Prostate Secure, a natural dietary supplement for men. Prostate Secure is a scientifically formulated blend of clinically significant amounts of natural ingredients. It brings together the most powerful plant sterols like beta-sitosterol and saw palmetto, along with antioxidants such as vitamin D3, resveratrol, and lycopene to support good prostate health, proper urinary flow, function, and more. Check out ProstateSecure.com. Order online and save 10% with promo code SAVE10 or call 1-800-239-9432. That's 800-239-9432. Or visit ProstateSecure.com. Take control of your prostate health naturally with Prostate Secure.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
We return. Alan Greenfield holding the floor, and I think some of you are going to have questions of him in a moment. Tim Beckley, Claudia Cunningham, our co-hosts Greg Bishop and Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. So, okay, you've raised a whole bunch of things here. So many cans of worms, Alan. So we're talking about now the possibilities that so many planets out there will harbor life, but not as we know it. Sometimes they are the basic forms of life using chemistry like we have here. Maybe they're made up of arsenic. Maybe they're made up of old lace. I don't know, but I'm just bringing that up. But seriously speaking here, with all the
you're
possibilities...
You're going to have to explain that one. You're dating yourself there.
Okay.
It's an old movie, very funny, about ladies, nice old ladies that poison their relatives. That's good.
Okay.
End of review. Okay. And old lace.
Joan Crawford, Betty Davis.
Excellent. Da-da-da-da. Okay. Go on, Gene.
Okay, so the point being here that... Are you saying or suggesting, Alan, that maybe either there is no ET or ET doesn't really care about who and what we are?
I'm only suggesting that the evidence for UFOs is confined to the Earth and the near vicinity of Earth. And while I think statistically it is likely that life as we know it and according to the most recent scientific evidence, apparently, quite a bit of life as we don't know it, you know, literally, I don't think it was arsenic, but it was some other poison, or maybe it was arsenic, I don't know.
It can survive in an arsenic-rich environment.
Yeah, well, the point being that life doesn't necessarily have to be as we know it, but the scattering in the universe is something not to be sneezed at. Scientists tend to be, conventional scientists tend to be overawed by it, but the distance between stars is immense. And the likelihood that a nearby star system has advanced life that would be visiting the Earth, at least on any kind of regular basis, as UFOs are a daily phenomenon, is extremely remote. The likelihood, however, if you look into the lore of what Jacques Vallée used to refer to as Magonia, the other where, the fairy world, the world where you go into the mountain for a night and spend the night with the goddess Venus and come out and it's 100 years later and everybody you knew is dead, that kind of distortion of space-time and materiality. It's consistent with a lot of cutting-edge physics, and it's a lot, in a certain sense, closer at hand. Now, the two may interact, but what I'm saying is the phenomena that we're dealing with, we have yet to trace anything going from star B to star A, Sol, and winding up here on Earth. Even Carl Sagan said it may have happened in ancient times, and maybe there's a little bit of truth in our old and late friend Jona Fortner's a very sophisticated view of ancient visitations, and Eric von Daniken's a lot less sophisticated but a lot more loudly trumpeted views of perhaps the occasional visitor long ago leaving their marks on civilization. That may have happened. I don't know. It's certainly possible. But does it have a lot to do with the UFO phenomena? Only if, in being interdimensional, there's also some way to go through space-time as well as through dimensionality. Otherwise, the distances are just too vast for the type of phenomena we have, unless we suppose they set up a base on the far side of the moon and have hidden it from those few astronauts who have ventured around, sometimes in a very cavalier sort of way. Not impossible.
Or physics isn't as we know it right now, and there's ways to cheat, bend, or change the rules that we have right now.
Physics as we know it right now is so vastly different from physics as we knew it 10 years ago, if you follow it closely.
Well, actually, some of the stuff recently does make it more possible. I'm not pushing for the ETH theory. I'm probably the last person to do that. But there are two sides to it. One side of it says that, as you say, some of the physics now is saying that it could be allowed that somebody could travel from one place to another without having to worry about the distance.
Yeah, you've got a lot of different possibilities there, considering the universe is... It could happen, but again, why would that... I'm more interested sociologically in why that was the first thing people were leaping at when this burst onto the public consciousness in 1947 and has continued to be the predominant theory, because we have... While it's possible, we have no evidence of that, but we have thousands of years of evidence of communication between here and otherwhere, the whole Day of the Dead lore, where the world of the dead and the world of the living come closely together on what we now refer to as Halloween, is many centuries old, probably dating to pre-Christian times, as a rite and a belief system. And yet that was not the first place that we turned to. I guess other planets are palatable to a tech-oriented society, but that doesn't make it more true. And to me, when I think about, I don't like to go back to the old cases, and I have said this before, but I will repeat one thing. When I, as an occultist, look at Albert K. Binder and his room and the way it was set up, whether he knew it or not, he was doing a magical invocation, and
yeah,
he got what he asked for. You know, doesn't work for me because that's not my magic word. But as I showed in A Secret Cipher of the Euphonauts and Secret Rituals of the Men in Black, both of them basically on the Men in Black phenomena, the meaning of these strange terms is identical with the type of meaning that you get from so-called magical words of power. What they mean, I don't know, but they seem to be keys to other vibrations, other elements, and things enter here, but they seem to have trouble staying here. And I'm sure Tim could tell you some stories about, you know, invisible men in black and men in black who seem to want to leave very quickly because they're about to melt. My favorite is one that the late John Keel exposed at the Cape May tiny case, where the entity was listless and seemed to be trying to leave before he dissolved. I think they live on our energy and project themselves, but basically you've got gray aliens in black drag because that's the way we expect to see them.
They're like tulpas, thought forms that only have a certain limited amount of lifespan.
Exactly.
I use the term
like tulka, and it's very interesting. Why is tulka not considered a priori, anyway, as likely to be identical with what we're talking about when we talk about men in black in the UFO context? I think it should be. I think that's
the
first thing we should examine and either dismiss or validate. But it's rarely talked about, rarely looked at, except by a few people like thee and me. As I've said before, most of the people who devoted themselves to Men in Black cases, so-called, as a specialty, died off young. Keel is the only one I can think of who lived to a relatively ripe, relatively old age. It's not my specialty. I want to say that. It's just something that people call on me for in the absence of the specialist. But they all died in their 40s and 50s or younger, a lot younger in some cases. And some say that's, you know, just coincidence. But I know that the pool of people that are actively involved in any aspect of ufology is very small in absolute and relative terms. We're talking about, a few hundred people that are really activists, maybe conceivably 1,000 or so. And the statistical likelihood of that many people dying in their 40s and 50s in a society where the, and all of these were American cases that I'm thinking of, where the average age and of mortality is in its 72 to 74 for men, I believe it is currently, and 74 to 76 for women. It doesn't gel. It's bad statistics, and a little demographic work and a little statistical work will show you it's unlikely to be coincidence. I think they were murdered.
In a conventional way, or by attrition, or because they are working with things they should not, or what do you think?
I think when at the culmination of a series of deaths, when Ron Bonds ate out at a restaurant and was said to have died within 12 hours of, quote, food poisoning, which no one else in the restaurant, including his wife, who was eating the same thing, died, Illuminate Press, which was the only press at that time, or one of the few that was publishing and republishing books devoted both to the UFO phenomena and to conspiracy theory stuff. I don't think it was coincidental. I think he was killed.
I'll tell you what.
Who killed him?
We have to get into more of that in a moment. We have Alan Greenfield. Our co-hosts are Chris O'Brien and Greg Bishop. We also have Tim Beckley, Claudia Cunningham. Please check our forums, forum.paracast.com. That's forum.paracast.com. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.